And with real reverence, Joe lifted the Geiger counter out of the shopping bag. The battery that powered it had been a long-dead soldier, and the terminals had been thick with gunk. But a little baking soda took care of the corrosion, and Nori had found not just one but 3 6-volt dry cells in her father's tool closet.
"He's kind of a freak when it comes to batteries," she had confided, "and he's going to kill himself trying to learn boarding, but I love him."
Joe put his thumb on the power switch, then looked at them grimly. "You know, this thing could read zilch everywhere we take it, and there still might be a generator, just not one that emits alpha or beta wit."
"Do it, for God's sake," Benny said. "The suspense is killing me."
"He's right," Nori said. "Do it."
But here was an interesting thing. They had tested the Geiger counter plenty around Joe's house, and it worked fine. When they tried it on an old watch with a radium dial, the needle jerked appreciably. They'd each taken a turn. But now that they were out here, on site, so to speak, Joe felt frozen. There was sweat on his forehead. He could feel it beating up and getting ready to trickle down. He might have stood there quite a while if Nori hadn't put her hand over his. Then Benny added his. The three of them ended up pushing the slide switch together. The needle in the counts per second window immediately jumped to +5, and Nori clutched Joe's shoulder. Then it settled back to +2, and she relaxed her hold. They had no experience with radiation counters, but they all guessed they were seeing no more than a background count. Slowly, Joe walked around the bandstand with the Geiger-Müller tube held out on its coiled phone receiver-type cord. The power lamp glowed a bright amber, and the needle jiggled a little bit from time to time, but mostly it stayed close to the zero end of the dial. The little jumps they saw were probably being caused by their own movements. He wasn't surprised. Part of him knew it couldn't be so easy. But at the same time, he was bitterly disappointed. It was amazing, really, how well disappointment and lack of surprise complemented each other. They were like the Olsen twins of emotion.
"Let me," Nori said. "Maybe I'll have better luck."
He gave it over without protest. Over the next hour or so, they crisscrossed the town common, taking turns with the Geiger counter. They saw a car turn down Mill Street, but didn't notice Junior Rennie, who was feeling better again, behind the wheel. Nor did he notice them. An ambulance sped down Town Common Hill in the direction of Food City with its lights flashing and its siren wailing. This they looked at briefly, but were again absorbed when Junior reappeared shortly after, this time behind the wheel of his father's Hummer. They never used the frisbee they had brought as camouflage. They were too preoccupied. Nor did it matter. Few of the townspeople heading back to their homes bothered looking into the common. A few were hurt. Most were carrying liberated foodstuffs, and some were wheeling loaded shopping carts. Almost all looked ashamed of themselves. By noon, Joe and his friends were ready to give up. They were also hungry.
"Let's go to my house," Joe said. "My mom will make us something to eat."
"Great," Benny said. "Hope it's chop suey. Your ma's chop suey is tight." "Can we go through the Peace Bridge and try the other side first?" Nori asked.
Joe shrugged.
"Okay, but there's nothing over there but woods. Also, it's moving away from the center."
"Yes, but..."
She trailed off.
"But what?"
"Nothing, just an idea. It's probably stupid."
Joe looked at Benny. Benny shrugged and handed her the Geiger counter. They went back to the Peace Bridge and ducked under the sagging police tape. The walkway was dim, but not too dim for Joe to look over Nori's shoulder and see the Geiger counter's needle stir as they passed the halfway point, walking single file so as not to test the rotted boards under their feet too much. When they came out on the other side, a sign informed them, "You are now leaving the Chester's Mill Town Common, established 1808. A well-worn path led up a slope of oak, ash, and beech. Their fall foliage hung limply, looking sullen rather than gay. By the time they reached the foot of this path, the needle in the counts per second window stood between +5 and +10. Beyond +10, the meter's calibration rose steeply to +500 and then to +1000. The top end of the dial was marked in red. The needle was miles below that, but Joe was pretty sure its current position indicated more than just a background count. Benny was looking at the faintly quivering needle, but Joe was looking at Nori. "What were you thinking about?" he asked her. "Don't be afraid to spill it, because it doesn't seem like such a stupid idea after all."
"No,"
Benny agreed. He tapped the counts per second window. The needle jumped, then settled back to +7 or +8.
I was thinking a generator and a transmitter are practically the same thing, Nori said. And a transmitter doesn't have to be in the middle, just high up.
The CIK tower isn't, Benny said. Just sits in a clearing, pumping out the Jesus. I've seen it.
Yeah, but that thing's like super powerful, Nori replied. My dad said it's 100,000 watts or something. Maybe what we're looking for has a shorter range, so then I thought, what's the highest part of town?
Black Ridge, Joe said.
Black Ridge, she agreed, and held up a small fist.
Joe bumped her, then pointed.
That way, 2 miles, maybe 3.
He turned the Geiger-Müller tube in that direction, and they all watched fascinated as the needle rose to +10.
I'll be fucked, Benny said.
Maybe when you're 40, Nori said,
tough as ever, but blushing, just a little.
There's an old orchard out on the Black Ridge Road, Joe said. You can see the whole mill from it. TR-90, too. That's what my dad says. Anyway, it could be there. Nori, you're a genius.
He didn't have to wait for her to kiss him after all. He did the honors, although daring no more than the corner of her mouth. She looked pleased, but there was still a frown line between her eyes.
It might not mean anything. The needle's not exactly going crazy. Can we go out there on our bikes?
Sure, Joe said.
After lunch, Benny added. He thought of himself as the practical one. 6. While Joe, Benny, and Nori were eating lunch at the McClatchy house, it was indeed chop suey, and Rusty Everett, assisted by Barbie and the 2 teenage girls, were treating supermarket riot casualties at Kathy Russell, Big Jim Rennie sat in his study, going over a list and checking off items. He saw his Hummer roll back up the driveway and checked off another item. Brenda dropped off with the others. He thought he was ready as he could be anyway. And even if the dome disappeared this afternoon, he thought his butt was covered. Junior came in and dropped the Hummer's keys on Big Jim's desk. He was pale and needed a shave worse than ever, but he no longer looked like death on a cracker. His left eye was red, but not flaming.
All set, son?
Junior nodded.
Are we going to jail?
He spoke with an almost disinterested curiosity.
No, Big Jim said.
The idea that he might go to jail had never crossed his mind, not even when the Perkins witch had shown up here and started making her accusations. He smiled.
But Dale Barbara is.
No one's going to believe he killed Brenda Perkins.
Big Jim continued to smile.
They will. They're frightened and they will. It's how these things work.
How would you know?
Because I'm a student of history. You ought to try it sometime.
It was on the tip of his tongue to ask Junior why he had left Bowdoin. Had he quit, flunked out, or been asked to leave? But this wasn't the time or the place. Instead, he asked his son if he was up to one more errand. Junior rubbed at his temple.
I guess. In for a penny, in for a pound.
You'll need help. You could take Frank, I suppose, but I'd prefer the Thibodeau lad if he's able to move around today.
Not Searles, though. A good fellow, but stupid. Junior said nothing. Big Jim wondered again what was wrong with the boy. But did he really want to know? Perhaps when this crisis was over. In the meantime, he had many pots and skillets on the stove, and dinner would be served soon.
What do you want me to do?
Let me check one thing first. Big Jim picked up his cell.
Each time he did this, he expected to find it as useless as tits on a bull, but it was still working. At least for in-town calls, which was all he cared about. He selected PD. It rang 3 times at the cop shop before Stacy Moggin picked up. She sounded harried, not at all like her usual businesslike self. Big Jim wasn't surprised by that, given the morning's festivities. He could hear quite an uproar in the background.
Police, she said. If this isn't an emergency, please hang up and call back later. We're awfully
It's Jim Rennie, hon.
He knew that Stacy hated being called hun, which is why he did it.
Put on the chief.
Chop, chop.
He's trying to break up a fist fight in front of the main desk right now, she said. Maybe you could call back
No, I can't call back later, Big Jim said. Do you think I'd be calling if this wasn't important? Just go over there, hun, and
Mace, the most aggressive one. Then you send Pete into his office to... She didn't let him finish, and she didn't put him on hold either. The phone hit the desk with a clunk. Big Jim was not put out of countenance. When he was getting under somebody's skin, he liked to know it. In the far distance, he heard someone call someone else a thieving son of a bitch. This made him smile. A moment later, he was put on hold, Stacy not bothering to inform him. Big Jim listened to McGruff the crime dog for a while, then the phone was picked up. It was Randolph, sounding out of breath. Talk fast, Jim, because this place is a madhouse. The ones who didn't go to the hospital with broken ribs or something are mad as hornets. Everybody's blaming everybody else. I'm trying to keep from filling up the cells downstairs, but it's like half of them want to go there.
Does increasing the size of the police force sound like a better idea to you today, Chief?
Christ, yes. We took a beating. I've got one of the new officers, that Rue girl, up to the hospital, with the whole lower half of her face broken. She looks like the Bride of Frankenstein.
Big Jim's smile widened to a grin. Sam Berdreau had come through. But of course there was another thing about feeling it. When you did have to pass the ball, on those infrequent occasions when you couldn't shoot it yourself, you always passed it to the right person.
Someone nailed her with a rock. Mel Searles, too. He was knocked out for a while, but he seems to be all right now. It's ugly, though. I sent him to the hospital to get patched up.
Well, that's a shame, Big Jim said.
Someone was targeting my officers, more than one someone, I think. Big Jim, can we really get more volunteers?
I think you'll find plenty of willing recruits among the upstanding young people of this town, Big Jim said. In fact, I know several from the Holy Redeemer congregation.
The Killian boys, for instance. Jim, the Killian boys are dumber than crackerjacks.
I know, but they're strong and they'll take orders.
He paused.
Also, they can shoot.
Are we going to arm the new police?
Randolph sounded doubtful and hopeful at the same time.
After what happened today, of course. I was thinking 10 or 12 good, trustworthy young people to start with. Frank and Junior can help pick them out, and we'll need more if this thing isn't sorted out by next week. Pam and Scrip. Give them first dibs on supplies when and if rationing starts. Them and their families.
Okay, send Junior down, will you? Frank's here and so's Thibodeau. He got banged around some at the market, and he had to get the bandage on his shoulder changed, but he's pretty much good to go.
Randolph lowered his voice.
He said Barbara changed the bandage. Did a good job, too.
That's ducky. But our Mr. Barbara won't be changing bandages for long.
And I've got another job for Junior. Officer Thibodeau, too. Send him up here. What for?
If you needed to know, I'd tell you. Just send him up. Junior and Frank can make a list of possible new recruits later on.
Well, if you say... Randolph was interrupted by a fresh uproar. Something either fell over or was thrown. There was a crash as something else shattered. Break that up! Randolph roared.
Smiling, Big Jim held the phone away from his ear. He could hear perfectly well, just the same.
Get those two! Not those two, you idiot, the other two!
No, I don't want them arrested, I want them the hell out of here! On their asses, if they won't go any other way!
A moment later, he was speaking to Big Jim again.
Remind me why I wanted this job, because I'm starting to forget.
It'll sort itself out, Big Jim soothed. You'll have 5 new bodies by tomorrow, fresh young bucks, and another 5 by Thursday. Another 5 at least. Now, send young Thibodeau up here, and make sure that cell at the far end downstairs is ready for a fresh occupant. Mr. Barbara will be using it as of this afternoon.
On what charge?
How about 4 counts of murder, plus inciting a riot at the local supermarket? Will that do?
He hung up before Randolph could reply.
What do you want me and Carter to do? Junior asked.
This afternoon? First a little reconnaissance and planning. I'll assist with the planning. Then you take part in arresting Barbara. You'll enjoy that, I think.
Yes, I will.
Once Barbara's in the jug, you and Officer Thibodeau should eat a good supper, because your real job's tonight.
What?
Burning down the Democrat office, how does that sound? Junior's eyes widened.
Why?
That his son had to ask was a disappointment.
Because for the immediate future, having a newspaper is not in the town's best interest. Any objections?
Dad, has it ever occurred to you that you might be crazy?
Big Jim nodded.
Like a fox, he said.
7.
All the times I've been in this room, Jenny Tomlinson said in her new foggy voice, and I never once imagined myself on the table.
Even if you had, you probably wouldn't have imagined being worked on by the guy who served you your morning steak and eggs. Barbie tried to keep it light, but he'd been patching and bandaging since arriving at Kathy Russell on the ambulance's first run, and he was tired. A lot of that, he suspected, was stress. He was scared to death of making someone worse instead of better. He could see the same worry on the faces of Gina Bufalino and Harriet Bigelow. And they didn't have the Jim Rennie clock ticking in their heads to make things worse.
I think it'll be a while before I'm capable of eating another steak, Ginny said.
Rusty had set her nose before seeing any of the other patients. Barbie had assisted, holding the sides of her head as gently as he could and murmuring encouragement. Rusty plugged her nostrils with gauze soaked in medicinal cocaine. He gave the anesthetic 10 minutes to work, using the time to treat a badly sprained wrist and put an elastic bandage on an obese woman's swollen knee. Then tweezed out the gauze strips and grabbed a scalpel. The PA was admirably quick. Before Barbie could tell Ginny to say wishbone, Rusty had slid the scalpel's handle up the clearer of her nostrils, braced it against her septum, and used it as a lever.
Like a man prying off a hubcap, Barbie had thought,
listening to the small but perfectly audible crunch as Ginny's nose came back to something approximating its normal position. She didn't scream, but her fingernails tore holes in the paper covering the examination table, and tears poured down her cheeks. She was calm now. Rusty had given her a couple of Percocets, but tears were still leaking from her less swollen eye. Her cheeks were a puffy purple. Barbie thought she looked a little like Rocky Balboa after the Apollo Creed fight.
"Look on the bright side," he said.
Is there one?
Definitely, the Rue girl is looking at a month of soup and milkshakes.
Georgia? I heard she took a hit. How bad?
She'll live, but it's going to be a long time before she's pretty. That one was never going to be Miss Apple Blossom.
And in a lower voice,
was it her, screaming?
Barbie nodded. Georgia's yowls had filled the whole hospital, it seemed. Rusty gave her morphine, but she didn't go down for a long time. She must have the constitution of a horse.
And the conscience of an alligator, Ginny added in her foggy voice. I wouldn't wish what happened to her on anybody, but it's still a damn good argument for karmic retribution. How long have I been here? My darn watch is broken.
Barbie glanced at his own. It's now 14:30, so I guess that puts you about 5.5 hours on the road to recovery. He twisted at the hips, heard his back crackle, and felt it loosen up a little. He decided Tom Petty was right. The waiting was the hardest part. He reckoned he would feel easier once he was actually in a cell. Unless he was dead, it had crossed his mind that it might be convenient for him to be killed while resisting arrest.
What are you smiling about? She asked.
Nothing. He held up a set of tweezers. Now be quiet and let me do this. Soon as begun, soon as done.
I ought to get up and pitch in.
If you try it, the only pitching you'll do will be straight down to the floor. She looked at the tweezers.
Do you know what you're doing with those?
You bet. I won a gold medal in Olympic glass removal.
Your bullshit quotient is even higher than my ex-husband's.
She was smiling a little. Barbie guessed it hurt her, even with painkillers on board. And he liked her for it. You're not going to be one of those tiresome medical people who turns into a tyrant when it's her turn for treatment, are you? He asked.
That was Dr. Haskell. He ran a big splinter under his thumbnail once, and when Rusty offered to take it out, the whiz said he wanted a specialist.
She laughed, then winced, then groaned. If it makes you feel any better, the cop who punched you took a rock in the head.
More karma. Is he up and around?
Yep. Mel Searles had walked out of the hospital 2 hours ago with a bandage wrapped around his head.
When Barbie bent toward her with the tweezers, she instinctively turned her head away. He turned it back, pressing his hand, very gently, against the cheek that was less swollen.
I know you have to, she said. I'm just a baby about my eyes.
Given how hard he hit you, you're lucky the glass is around them instead of in them.
I know. Just don't hurt me, okay?
Okay, he said. You'll be on your feet in no time, Ginny. I'll make this quick.
He wiped his hands to make sure they were dry. He hadn't wanted the gloves, didn't trust his grip in them. Then bent closer. There were maybe half a dozen small splinters of broken spectacle lens peppered in her brows and around her eyes, but the one he was worried about was a tiny dagger just below the corner of her left eye. Barbie was sure Rusty would have taken it out himself if he'd seen it, but he'd been concentrating on her nose. Do it quick, he thought. He who hesitates is usually fucked. He tweezed the shard out and dropped it into a plastic basin on the counter. A tiny seed pearl of blood welled up where it had been. He let out his breath. Okay, nothing to the rest of these. Smooth sailing.
From your lips to God's ear, Ginny said.
He had just removed the last of the splinters when Rusty opened the door of the exam room and told Barbie he could use a little help. The PA was holding a tin sucrets box in one hand. Help with what? A hemorrhoid that walks like a man, Rusty said. This anal sore wants to leave with his ill-gotten gains. Under normal circumstances, I'd be delighted to see his miserable backside going out the door, but right now I might be able to use him. Ginny? Barbie asked. You okay? She made a waving gesture at the door. He had reached it, following after Rusty when she called.
Hey, handsome.
He turned back, and she blew him a kiss. Barbie caught it. 8.
There was only one dentist in Chester's Mill. His name was Joe Boxer. His office was at the end of Strout Lane, where his dental suite offered a scenic view of Presteel Stream and the Peace Bridge, which was nice if you were sitting up. Most visitors to said suite were in the reclining position, with nothing to look at but several dozen pictures of Joe Boxer's Chihuahua pasted on the ceiling. In one of them, the goddamn dog looks like he's unloading, Dougie Twitchell told Rusty after one visit. Maybe it's just the way that kind of dog sits down, but I don't think so. I think I spent half an hour looking at a dish rag with eyes take a shit while the box dug two wisdom teeth out of my jaw. With a screwdriver, it felt like.
The shingle hung outside Dr. Boxer's office looked like a pair of basketball shorts large enough to fit a fairy tale giant. They were painted a gaudy green and gold, the colors of the mill's wildcats. The sign read, Joseph Boxer, DDS. And below that, Boxer is brief. And he was fairly speedy, everyone agreed. But he recognized no medical plans and accepted only cash.
If a pulp cutter walked in with his gums superating and his cheeks puffed out like those of a squirrel with a mouthful of nuts and started talking about his dental insurance, Boxer would tell him to get the money from Anthem or Blue Cross or whoever, and then come back to see him. A little competition in town might have forced him to soften these draconian policies, but the half a dozen who'd tried to make a go of it in the mill since the early 90s had given up. There was speculation that Joe Boxer's good friend Jim Rennie might have had something to do with the paucity of competition, but no proof. Meantime, Boxer might be seen on any given day cruising around in his Porsche, with its bumper sticker reading, My other car is also a Porsche. As Rusty came down the hall with Barbie trailing after, Boxer was heading for the main doors, or trying to. Twitch had him by the arm. Hung from Boxer's other arm was a basket filled with Eggo waffles. Nothing else. Just packages and packages of Eggos. Barbie wondered, not for the first time, if maybe he was lying in the ditch that ran behind Dipper's parking lot, beaten to a pulp and having a terrible, brain-damaged dream.
I'm not staying, Boxer yapped. I have to get these home to the freezer. What you're proposing has almost no chance of working anyway, so take your hands off me.
Barbie observed the butterfly bandage bisecting one of Boxer's eyebrows and the larger bandage on his right forearm. The dentist had fought the good fight for his frozen waffles, it seemed.
Tell this goon to take his hands off me, he said when he saw Rusty. I've been treated and now I'm going home.
Not just yet, Rusty said. You were treated gratis, and I expect you to pay that forward. Boxer was a little guy, no more than 5'4". But he drew himself up to his full height and puffed out his chest.
Expect and be damned. I hardly see oral surgery, which the state of Maine hasn't certified me to do, by the way, as a quid pro quo for a couple of bandages. I work for a living, Everett, and I expect to be paid for my work.
You'll be paid back in heaven, Barbie said. Isn't that what your friend Rennie would say?
He has nothing to do with...
Barbie took a step closer and peered into Boxer's green plastic shopping basket. The words, Property of Food City, were printed on the handle. Boxer tried, with no great success, to shield the basket from him. Speaking of payment, did you pay for those waffles?
Don't be ridiculous. Everybody was taking everything. All I took were these.
He looked at Barbie defiantly.
I have a very large freezer, and I happen to enjoy waffles.
Everyone was taking everything won't be much of a defense if you're charged with looting, Barbie said mildly. It was impossible for Boxer to draw himself up any further, and yet somehow he did. His face was so red, it was almost purple.
Then take me to court. What court? Case closed. Ha!
He started to turn away again. Barbie reached out and grabbed him. Not by the arm, but by the basket. I'll just confiscate this then, shall I?
You can't do that.
No, take me to court then. Barbie smiled. Oh, I forgot.
What court?
Dr. Boxer glared at him, lips drawn back to show the tips of tiny, perfect teeth. We'll just toast those old waffles up in the calf, Rusty said.
Yum. Tasty.
Yeah, well, we've still got some electricity to toast them with, Twitch muttered. After that, we can poke them on forks and cook them over the incinerator out back.
You can't do this.
Barbie said, let me be perfectly clear. Unless you do whatever it is Rusty wants you to do, I have no intention of letting go your egos. Chaz Bender, who had a Band-Aid on the bridge of his nose and another on the side of his neck, laughed, not very kindly.
Pay up, Doc, he called. Isn't that what you always say?
Boxer turned his glare first on Bender, then on Rusty.
What you want has almost no chance of working. You must know that.
Rusty opened the Sucrets box and held it out. Inside were 6 teeth. Tori McDonald picked these up outside the supermarket. She got down on her knees and grubbed through puddles of Georgia Rue's blood to find them. And if you want to have Eggos for breakfast in the near future, Doc, you're going to put them back in Georgia's head.
And if I just walk away?
Chaz Bender, the history teacher, took a step forward. His fists were clenched.
In that case, my mercenary friend, I'll beat the shit out of you in the parking lot.
I'll help, Twitch said.
I won't help, Barbie said, but I'll watch. There was laughter and some applause. Barbie felt simultaneously amused and sick to his stomach. Boxer's shoulders slumped. All at once, he was just a little man caught in a situation too big for him. He took the Sucrets box, then looked at Rusty.
An oral surgeon working under optimum conditions might be able to reimplant these teeth, and they might actually root, although he would be careful to give the patient no guarantees. If I do it, she'll be lucky to get back one or two. She's more likely to pull them down her windpipe and choke on them.
A stocky woman with a lot of flaming red hair shouldered Chaz Bender aside.
I'll sit with her and make sure that doesn't happen. I'm her mother.
Dr. Boxer sighed.
Is she unconscious?
Before he could get any further, 2 Chester's Mill police units, one of them the Green Chief's car, pulled up in the turnaround. Freddie Denton, Jr. Rennie, Frank the Lessips, and Carter Thibodeau got out of the lead car. Chief Randolph and Jackie Weddington emerged from the chief's car. Rusty's wife got out of the back. All were armed, and as they approached the main doors of the hospital, they drew their weapons. The little crowd that had been watching the confrontation with Joe Boxer murmured and drew back, some in its number undoubtedly expecting to be arrested for theft. Barbie turned to Rusty Everett.
Look at me, he said.
What do you mean?
Look at me.
Barbie lifted his arms, turning them to show both sides. Then he pulled up his t-shirt, showing first his flat stomach, then turning to exhibit his back.
Do you see marks, bruises?
No.
Make sure they know that, Barbie said. It was all he had time for. Randolph led his officers through the door.
Dale Barbara,
Step forward. Before Randolph could lift his gun and point it at him, Barbie did so. Because accidents happen. Sometimes on purpose. Barbie saw Rusty's puzzlement and liked him even better for his innocence. He saw Gina Buffalino and Harriet Bigelow, their eyes wide. But most of his attention was reserved for Randolph and his backups. All the faces were stony, but on Thibodeau's and De Lesseps, he saw undeniable satisfaction. For them, this was all about payback for that night at Dipper's. And payback was going to be a bitch. Rusty stepped in front of Barbie as if to shield him.
Don't do that, Barbie murmured.
Rusty, no, Linda cried. Peter, Rusty asked, what's this about? Barbie's been helping out and he's been doing a damn good job.
Barbie was afraid to move the big PA aside or even touch him. He raised his arms instead, very slowly, holding his palms out.
When they saw his arms go up, Junior and Freddie Denton came at Barbie, and fast. Junior bumped Randolph on his way by, and the Beretta clutched in the chief's fist went off. The sound was deafening in the reception area. The bullet went into the floor 3 inches in front of Randolph's right shoe, making a surprisingly large hole. The smell of gunpowder was immediate and startling. Gina and Harriet screamed and bolted back down the main corridor, vaulting nimbly over Joe Boxer, who was crawling along with his head tucked and his normally neat hair hanging in his face. Brendan Ellerby, who had been treated for a mildly dislocated jaw, kicked the dentist in the forearm as he stampeded past. The Secrets box spun out of Boxer's hand, struck the main desk, and flew open, scattering the teeth Tori MacDonald had so carefully picked up. Junior and Freddie grabbed Rusty, who made no effort to fight them. He looked totally confused. They pushed him aside. Rusty went stumbling across the main lobby trying to keep his feet. Linda grabbed him, and they sprawled to the floor together.
What the fuck? Twitch was roaring. What in the fuck?
Limping slightly, Carter Thibodeau approached Barbie, who saw what was coming but kept his hands raised. Lowering them could get him killed. And maybe not just him. Now that one gun had been fired, the chance of others going off was that much higher.
Hello, Hoss, Carter said. Ain't you been a busy boy?
He punched Barbie in the stomach. Barbie had tensed his muscles in anticipation of the blow, but it still doubled him over. The son of a bitch was strong.
Stop that! Rusty roared.
He still looked bewildered, but now he looked angry as well.
Stop that right goddamn now!
He tried to get up, but Linda put both of her arms around him and held him down.
Don't, she said. Don't. He's dangerous.
What?
Rusty turned his head and stared at her with disbelief.
Are you crazy?
Barbie was still holding his hands up, showing them to the cops. Doubled over as he was, it made him look like he was salaaming.
Thibodeau, Randolph said. Step back. That's enough. Put that gun away, you idiot, Rusty shouted at Randolph. You want to kill someone?
Randolph gave him a brief look of dismissive contempt, then turned to Barbie.
Stand up straight, son.
Barbie did. It hurt, but he managed. He knew that if he hadn't been prepared for Thibodeau's gut punch, he would have been curled on the floor, gasping for breath. And would Randolph have tried kicking him to his feet? Would the other cops have joined him in spite of the spectators in the hall, some of whom were now creeping back for a better view? Of course, because their blood was up. It was how these things went.
Randolph said, I'm arresting you for the murders of Angela McCain, Dodie Sanders, Lester A. Coggins, and Brenda Perkins.
Each name struck Barbie, but the last one hit the hardest. The last one was a fist. That sweet woman. She had forgotten to be careful. Barbie couldn't blame her. She had still been in deep grief for her husband. But he could blame himself for letting her go to Rennie, for encouraging her.
What happened? He asked Randolph. What in God's name did you people do?
Like you don't know, Freddie Denton said.
What kind of psycho are you? Jackie Weddington asked.
Her face was a twisted mask of loathing, her eyes small with rage. Barbie ignored them both. He was staring into Randolph's face with his hands still raised over his head. All it would take was the smallest excuse and they'd be on him. Even Jackie, ordinarily the pleasantest of women, might join in,
although with her it would take a reason instead of just an excuse. Or perhaps not. Sometimes, even good people snapped. A better question, he said to Randolph, is what you let Rennie do, because this is his mess and you know it. His fingerprints are all over it.
Shut up!
Randolph turned to Junior.
Cuff him!
Junior reached for Barbie, but before he could so much as touch a raised wrist, Barbie put his hands behind his back and turned around. Rusty and Linda Everett were still on the floor, Linda with her arms wrapped around her husband's chest in a restraining bear hug.
Remember,
Barbie said to Rusty as the plastic cuffs went on, and were then tightened until they dug into the scant meat above the heels of his hands. Rusty stood up. When Linda tried to hold him, he pushed her away and gave her a look she had never seen before. There was sternness in it and reproach, but there was also pity. Peter, he said, and when Randolph began to turn away, he raised his voice to a shout.
I'm talking to you. You look at me while I do.
Randolph turned. His face was a stone.
He knew you were here for him.
Sure he did, Junior said. He may be crazy, but he's not stupid.
Rusty took no notice of this.
He showed me his arms. His face raised his shirt to show me his stomach and back. He is unmarked.
Unless he raises a bruise where Thibodeau sucker punched him.
Carter said, Three women. Three women and a preacher. He deserved it.
Rusty didn't shift his gaze from Randolph.
This is a setup.
All due respect, Eric, not your department, Randolph said. He had holstered his sidearm, which was a relief.
That's right, Rusty said. I'm a patch-em-up guy, not a cop or a lawyer. What I'm telling you is, if I have occasion to look him over again while he's in your custody, and he's got a lot of cuts and bruises, God help you.
What are you going to do, call the Civil Liberties Union?
Frank de Lesseps asked. He was white-lipped with fury.
Your friend there beat four people to death. Brenda Perkins' neck was broken. One of the girls was my fiancée, and she was sexually molested, probably after she was dead, as well as before, is the way it looks.
Most of the crowd that had scattered at the gunshot had crept back to watch, and now a soft and horrified groan arose from it.
This is the guy you're defending? You ought to be in jail yourself.
Frank, shut up, Linda said.
Rusty looked at Frank de Lesseps, the boy he had treated for chickenpox, measles, head lice picked up at summer camp, a broken wrist suffered sliding into second base, and once, when he was 12, a particularly malicious case of poison ivy. He saw very little resemblance between that boy and this man.
And if I was locked up, then what, Frankie? What if your mother has another gallbladder attack, like last year? Do I wait for visiting hours at the jail to treat her?
Frank stepped forward, raising a hand to either slap or punch. Junior grabbed him.
He'll get his, don't worry. Everyone on Barbara's side will. All in good time.
Sides?
Rusty sounded honestly bewildered.
What are you talking about, sides? This isn't a goddamn football game.
Junior smiled, as if he knew a secret. Rusty turned to Linda.
Those are your colleagues talking. Do you like how they sound?
For a moment, she couldn't look at him. Then, with an effort, she did.
They're mad, that's all, and I don't blame them. I am too. Four people, Eric, didn't you hear? He killed them, and he almost certainly raped at least two of the women. I helped take them out of the hearse at Bowie's. I saw the stains.
Rusty shook his head.
I just spent the morning with him, watching him help people, not hurt them.
Let it go, Barbie said. Stand back, big guy. It's not the Junior poked him in the ribs. Hard.
You have the right to remain silent, ass munch.
He did it, Linda said.
She stretched out a hand to Rusty, saw he wasn't going to take it, and dropped it to her side.
They found his dog tags in Angie McCain's hand.
Rusty was speechless. He could only watch as Barbie was hustled out to the chief's car and locked in the back seat with his hands still cuffed behind him. There was one moment when Barbie's eyes found Rusty's. Barbie shook his head. A single shake only, but hard and firm. Then he was driven away. There was silence in the lobby. Junior and Frank had gone with Randolph. Carter, Jackie, and Freddie Denton headed out to the other police car. Linda stood looking at her husband with pleading and anger. Then the anger disappeared. She stepped toward him, raising her arms, wanting to be held, if only for a few seconds. No, he said. She stopped.
What's wrong with you?
What's wrong with you? Did you miss what just happened here?
Rusty, she was holding his dog tags.
He nodded slowly. Convenient, wouldn't you say? Her face, which had been both hurt and hopeful, now froze. She seemed to notice that her arms were still held out to him, and she lowered them.
Four people, she said. Three beaten almost beyond recognition. There are sides, and you need to think about which one you're on.
So do you, honey, Rusty said. From outside, Jackie called,
Linda, come on.
Rusty was suddenly aware he had an audience, and that many among it had voted for Jim Rennie again and again.
Just think about this, Lynn, and think about who Pete Randolph works for.
Linda! Jackie called. Linda Everett left with her head dropped. She didn't look back. Rusty was okay until she got into the car. Then he began to tremble. He thought if he didn't sit down soon, he might fall down. A hand fell on his shoulder. It was Twitch.
You okay, boss?
Yes.
As if saying so would make it so. Barbie had been hauled off to jail, and he'd had his first real argument with his wife in, what, 4 years? More like six.
No,
he wasn't okay.
Got a question, Twitch said. If those people were murdered, why'd they take the bodies to the Bowie funeral home instead of bringing them here for post-mortem examination? Whose idea was that?
Before Rusty could reply, the lights went out. The hospital generator had finally run dry. 9. After watching them polish off the last of her chop suey, which had contained the last of her hamburger, Claire motioned the three children to stand in front of her in the kitchen. She looked at them solemnly and they looked back, so young and scarily determined. Then with a sigh, she handed Joe his backpack. Benny peered inside and saw three PB&Js, three deviled eggs, three bottles of Snapple, and half a dozen oatmeal raisin cookies. Although still full of lunch, he brightened.
Most excellent Mrs. McSee. You are a true...
She paid no heed. All her attention was fixed on Joe. I understand that this could be important, so I'm going along. I'll even drive you out there if you...
Don't have to, Mom, Joe said. It's an easy ride.
Safe, too, Nori added. Hardly anyone on the roads.
Claire's eyes were locked on her son's in the mom death stare.
But I need two promises. First, that you'll be home before dark. And I don't mean the last gasp of twilight, either. I mean while the sun is still up. Second, if you do find something, mark its location and then leave it utterly and completely alone. I accept that you three might be the best people to look for this whatever it might be, but dealing with it is a job for adults. So, do I have your word? Give it to me, or I'll have to come with you as your chaperone.
Benny looked doubtful.
I've never been down Black Ridge Road, Mrs. McSee, but I've been past it. I don't think your civic would exactly be, like, up to the task.
Then promise me, or you stay right here. How's that?
Joe promised. So did the other two. Nori even crossed herself. Joe started to shoulder the backpack. Claire slipped in her cell phone.
Don't lose that, mister.
I won't, Mom.
Joe was shifting from foot to foot, anxious to be gone.
Nori, can I trust you to put the brakes on if these two get crazy?
Yes, ma'am,
Nori Calvert said, as if she hadn't dared death or disfigurement on her skateboard 1,000 times just in the last year.
You sure can.
I hope so, she said. I hope so.
Claire rubbed at her temples as if she were getting a headache.
Awesome lunch, Mrs. McSee, Benny said,
and held up his hand.
Slap me five.
Dear God, what am I doing? Claire asked.
Then she slapped him 5. 10. Behind the chest-high front desk in the police department lobby, where people came to complain about such troubles as theft, vandalism, and the neighbor's ceaselessly barking dog, was the ready room. It contained desks, lockers, and a coffee station, where a grouchy sign announced, "Coffee and donuts are not free." It was also the booking area. Here, Barbie was photographed by Freddie Denton and fingerprinted by Henry Morrison, while Peter Randolph and Denton stood close by with their guns drawn.
Limp. Keep 'em limp, Henry shouted.
This was not the man who had enjoyed talking with Barbie about the Red Sox-Yankees rivalry over lunch at Sweetbriar Rose. Always a BLT with a dill pickle spear on the side. This was a fellow who looked like he'd enjoy punching Dale Barber on the nose. Hard.
You don't roll 'em, I do, so keep 'em limp.
Barbie thought of telling Henry it was hard to relax your hands when you were standing this close to men with guns, especially if you knew the men wouldn't mind using them. He kept his mouth shut instead, and concentrated on relaxing his hands so Henry could roll the prints. And he wasn't bad at it, not at all. Under other circumstances, Barbie might have asked Henry why they were bothering, but he held his tongue on this subject as well.
All right, Henry said when he judged the prints clear. Take him downstairs, I want to wash my hands. I feel dirty just touching him.
Jackie and Linda had been standing to one side. Now, as Randolph and Denton holstered their guns and grabbed Barbie's arms, the two women drew their own. They were pointed down but ready.
I'd puke up everything you ever fed me if I could, Henry said. You disgust me.
I didn't do it, Barbie said. Think about it, Henry. Morrison only turned away. Thinking's in short supply around here today, Barbie thought, which he was sure was just the way Rennie liked it. Linda, he said, Mrs. Everett, don't talk to me. Her face was paper pale except for dark purplish crescents beneath her eyes. They looked like bruises.
Come on, sunshine, Freddy said, and ground a knuckle into the small of Barbie's back,
just above the kidney.
Your sweet awaits.
11. Joe, Benny, and Nori rode their bikes north along Route 119. The afternoon was summer hot, the air hazy and humid. Not a breath of breeze stirred. Crickets sang dozily in the high weeds at the sides of the road. The sky at the horizon had a yellow look that Joe first took for clouds. Then he realized it was a mixture of pollen and pollution on the surface of the dome. Out here, Presteel Stream ran close beside the highway, and they should have heard it chuckling as it sped southeast toward Castle Rock, eager to join the mighty Androscoggin. But they heard only the crickets, and a few crows cawing lackadaisically in the trees. They passed the deep-cut road, and came to the Black Ridge Road about a mile further on. It was dirt, badly potholed, and marked with two leaning, frost-heaved signs. The one on the left read, Four-Wheel Drive Recommended. The one on the right added, Bridge Weight Limit 4 Tons, Large Trucks Posted. Both signs were riddled with bullet holes.
I like a town where the folks take regular target practice, Benny said. Makes me feel safe from El Collider.
That's Al-Qaeda, Nitboy, Joe said.
Benny shook his head, smiling indulgently.
I'm talking about El Collider,
the terrible Mexican bandit who has relocated to western Maine in order to avoid...
Let's try the Geiger counter, Nori said, dismounting her bike.
It was back in the carrier of Benny's High Plains Schwinn. They had nested it in a few old towels from Claire's rag basket. Benny took it out and handed it to Joe, its yellow case the brightest thing in that hazy landscape. Benny's smile had disappeared.
You do it. I'm too nervous.
Joe considered the Geiger counter, then handed it off to Nori.
Chicken shits,
she said, not unkindly, and turned it on. The needle swung immediately to plus 50. Joe stared at it and felt his heart suddenly bumping in his throat instead of his chest.
Whoa,
Benny said.
We have liftoff.
Nori looked from the needle, which was steady, but still half a dial away from the red, to Joe.
Keep going?
Hell yeah, he said.
12. There was no power shortage at the police department, at least not yet. A green-tiled corridor ran the length of the basement beneath fluorescence that cast a depressingly changeless light. Dawn or midnight, it was always the blare of noon down here. Chief Randolph and Freddie Denton escorted, if such a word could be used considering the fists clamped on his upper arms, Barbie down the steps. The two women officers, guns still drawn, followed behind. To the left was the file room. To the right were five cells, two on each side and one at the very end. The last was the smallest, with a narrow bunk all but overhanging the seatless steel toilet. And this was the one toward which they frog-marched him. On orders from Pete Randolph, who had gotten his from Big Jim, even the worst actors in the supermarket riot had been released on their own recognizance. Where were they going to go? And all the cells were supposed to be empty. So, it was a surprise when Melvin Searles came bolting from number four, where he had been lurking. The bandage wound around his head had slipped down, and he was wearing sunglasses to mask two gaudily blackening eyes. In one hand he was carrying an athletic sock with something weighting the toe. A homemade blackjack. Barbie's first blurred impression was that he was about to be attacked by the invisible man.
Bastard!
Mal shouted, and swung his cosh. Barbie ducked, it whizzed over his head, striking Freddy Denton on the shoulder. Freddy bellowed and let go of Barbie. Behind them, the women were shouting.
Fucking murderer! Who'd you pay to bust my head, huh?
Mel swung again, and this time connected with the bicep of Barbie's left arm. That arm seemed to fall dead. Not sand in the sock, but a paperweight of some kind. Glass or metal, probably, but at least it was round. If it had had an angle, he would be bleeding.
You fucking fucked up fuck!
Mel roared, and swung the loaded sock again. Chief Randolph ducked backward, also letting go of Barbie. Barbie grabbed the top of the sock, wincing as the weight inside wound the bottom around his wrist. He pulled back hard and managed to yank Mel Searle's homemade weapon free. At the same time, Mel's bandage fell down over his dark glasses like a blindfold.
Hold it! Hold it! Jackie Weddington cried. Stop what you're doing, prisoner. This is your only warning.
Barbie felt a small, cold circle form between his shoulder blades. He couldn't see it, but knew without looking that Jackie had drawn her sidearm. If she shoots me, that's where the bullet will go. And she might, because in a small town where Big Trouble's almost a complete stranger, even the professionals are amateurs. He dropped the sock. Whatever was in it clunked on the lino. Then he raised his hands. Ma'am, I have dropped it, he called. Ma'am, I am unarmed. Please lower your weapon. Mel brushed the slipping bandage aside. It unrolled down his back like the tail of a swami's turban. He hit Barbie twice, once in the solar plexus and once in the pit of the stomach. This time Barbie wasn't prepared, and the air exploded out of his lungs with a harsh pah sound. He doubled over, then went to his knees. Mel hammered a fist down on the nape of his neck. Or maybe it was Freddy. For all Barbie knew, it could have been the fearless leader himself. And he went sprawling, the world growing thin and indistinct. Except for a chip in the linoleum. That he could see very well. With breathtaking clarity, in fact, and why not? It was less than an inch from his eyes.
Stop it! Stop it! Stop hitting him!
The voice was coming from a great distance, but Barbie was pretty sure it belonged to Rusty's wife.
He's down, don't you see? He's down!
Feet shuffled around him in a complicated dance. Someone stepped on his ass, stumbled, cried, oh, fuck, and then he was kicked in the hip. It was all happening far away. It might hurt later, but right now it wasn't too bad. Hands grabbed him and hauled him upright. Barbie tried to raise his head, but it was easier on the whole just to let it hang. He was propelled down the hall toward the final cell, the green lino sliding between his feet. What had Denton said upstairs? Your suite awaits. But I doubt if there's pillow mints or turndown service, Barbie thought. Nor did he care. All he wanted was to be left alone, to lick his wounds. Outside the cell, someone put a shoe in his ass to hurry him along even more. He flew forward, raising his right arm to stop himself from crashing face first into the green cinder block wall. He tried to raise his left arm as well, but it was still dead from the elbow down. He managed to protect his head, though, and that was good. He rebounded, staggered, then went to his knees again, this time beside the cot, as if about to say a prayer prior to turning in. Behind him, the cell door rumbled shut along its track. Barbie braced his hands on the bunk and pushed himself up, the left arm working a little now. He turned around just in time to see Randolph walking away in a pugnacious strut.
fists clenched, head lowered. Beyond him, Denton was unwinding what remained of Searles's bandage while Searles glared. The power of the glare somewhat vitiated by the sunglasses, now sitting askew on his nose. Beyond the male officers at the foot of the stairs were the women. They wore identical expressions of dismay and confusion. Linda Everett's face was paler than ever, and Barbie thought he saw the gleam of tears in her lashes. Barbie summoned all his will and called out to her.
Officer Everett.
She jumped, a little startled. Had anyone ever called her Officer Everett before? Perhaps schoolchildren, when she pulled crossing guard duty, which had probably been her heaviest responsibility as a part-time cop, up until this week.
Officer Everett, ma'am. Please, ma'am.
Shut up, Freddie Denton said. Barbie paid him no mind. He thought he was going to pass out or at least gray out, but for the time being he held on grimly.
Tell your husband to examine the bodies.
Mrs. Perkins in particular.
Ma'am, he must examine the bodies. They won't be at the hospital. Rennie won't allow them to...
Peter Randolph strode forward. Barbie saw what he had taken off Freddie Denton's belt and tried to raise his arms across his face, but they were just too heavy.
That's enough out of you, son, Randolph said.
He shoved the mace dispenser between the bars and squeezed the pistol grip. 13. Halfway over the rust-eaten Black Ridge Bridge, Nori stopped her bike and stood looking at the far side of the cut.
We'd better keep going, Joe said. Use the daylight while we got it.
I know, but look, Nori said, pointing. On the other bank, below a steep drop and sprawled in the drying mud where the Prestille had run full before the dome began to choke its flow, were the bodies of four deer, a buck, two does, and a yearling. All were of good size. It had been a fine summer in the mill, and they had fed well. Joe could see clouds of flies swarming above the carcasses, could even hear their somnolent buzz. It was a sound that would have been covered by running water on an ordinary day.
What happened to them? Benny asked. Do you think it has anything to do with what we're looking for?
If you're talking about radiation, Joe said, I don't think it works that fast.
Unless it's really high radiation, Nori said uneasily.
Joe pointed at the Geiger counter's needle.
Maybe, but this still isn't very high. Even if it was all the way in the red, I don't think it would kill animals as big as deer in only 3 days.
Benny said,
That buck's got a broken leg. You can see it from here.
I'm pretty sure one of the does has got two, Nori said. She was shading her eyes, the front ones. See how they're bent? Joe thought the doe looked as if she had died while trying to do some strenuous gymnastic stunt.
I think they jumped, Nori said.
Jumped off the bank, like those little rat guys are supposed to.
Lemons, Benny said.
Lemmings, bird brain, Joe said.
Trying to get away from something? Nori asked. Is that what they were doing?
Neither boy answered. Both looked younger than they had the week before. Like children forced to listen to a campfire story that's much too scary. The three of them stood by their bikes, looking at the dead deer and listening to the somnolent hum of the flies.
Go on? Joe asked.
I think we have to, Nori said. She swung a leg over the fork of her bike and stood astride it.
Right,
Joe said, and mounted his own bike.
Ollie, Benny said, this is another fine mess you've gotten me into.
Huh?
Never mind, Benny said. Ride, my soul brother, ride.
On the far side of the bridge, they could see that all the deer had broken legs. The yearling also had a crushed skull. Probably suffered when it came down on a large boulder that would have been covered by water on an ordinary day.
Try the Geiger counter again, Joe said.
Nori turned it on. This time, the needle danced just below plus 75. 14. Pete Randolph exhumed an old cassette recorder from one of Duke Perkins' desk drawers, tested it, and found the battery still good. When Junior Rennie came in, Randolph pressed record and set the little Sony on the corner of the desk, where the young man could see it. Junior's latest migraine was down to a dull mutter on the left side of his head,
and he felt calm enough. He and his father had been over this, and Junior knew what to say.
"It'll be strictly softball," Big Jim had said, "a formality."